podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Anfield Wrap. We're about to get into it with Paul Senior, with Dave Lynch and with Gareth Roberts. Liverpool beating Crystal Palace by 2-1. But before we do that, please vote for us. Vote for the Anfield Wrap for the FSA Award. It's theanfieldwrap.com/vote for tour. Vote FORTAW.
It is the Anfield Wrap. We're in association with The Athletic. If you want to sign up, it's theathletic.co.uk/TheAnfieldWrap, and there's all sorts of offers on there. I've got Paul Senior, I've got Gareth Roberts, I've got David Lynch. We've had some chat off air there. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. You speak to Senior online, he'll tell you he's unsubtle. And we are lined up to talk about Liverpool against Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2. David, we'll start off. Semi-serious football point. Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2. It took a while against Newcastle. It never really happened against United. And this is probably, I would say, our only genuinely fortunate win of the season. I know, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot because you are in the press box, but I do think there is a bit of a thing here where it is a bit the boys cried wolf with the media this season, where people have been trying to act like Liverpool are lucky with decisions or lucky in general. I think that there is an argument to say Liverpool maybe did get a bit lucky against Palace, but it is the first time, and it would be better if the narrative was they've got away with that one rather than they keep getting away with it every week.
Yeah, I mean, you can't... It's exactly as you say there about the fact that in the other games you could make such a compelling case to say that Liverpool were so dominant that they should have been well out of sight beforehand, whereas at Palace I think it's slightly more difficult to make that case, and obviously the way the goal comes about, bit of chaos in the box, that, you know, there is an element of fortune to that whichever way you look at it. That said, I don't, you know, it's not one way Liverpool play poorly.
No.
Certainly. And not one way they come away and you think that they don't merit the win in any way, or it's, you know, things have completely fallen for them. So, you know, there was enough in that performance certainly to think that Liverpool were good enough to win.
We love laughing at Hodgson. I'm more than happy to laugh at Hodgson, Gareth, but I thought Crystal Palace were really, really impressive. I thought they played brilliantly. I thought they had a really clear plan. I thought they were really intense. I thought they were really front foot. They were aggressive. They don't create a number of terrific chances, but it did not feel as though there was a lot happening in both penalty areas between the penalty spot and the six-yard box. I think all four centre-halves on the pitch all come off and arguably the four best performers.
Gary Cahill looked like he'd fought a war, and yeah, they did all play well, and look, Palace turn it on, don't they? You know, ultimately, and no Palace fan will like me saying this, and sorry Robbie if you're seeing this, mate, but you know, they're a smaller club than Liverpool. So when Liverpool come to town, they raise their game. It's one of the bigger games of the season. They want to punch above their weight. They want to bloody the nose of the league leaders, all that kind of stuff. And that's where it looked like they were. You know, they were banging to it. They were getting stuck in. There was a few meaty challenges. They defended well. They do create, you know, at least two big chances. You know, there's one in the first half that he should score. Obviously Zaha's one late on as well. You know, that's a chance that you think a player of his calibre should be taken. But ultimately Liverpool, you know, if we're saying Liverpool have got away with one a little bit, they sort of deserve to get away with one a little bit the way they've been playing the last 18 months, 2 years, I'd say. And you know, the lucky thing
it's what's done my head in about it, and I love the boiling piss thing, and I'm bang in favour of it, and I am in favour of it, but there is a bit of a thing here where this is where acting like this is the case all the time, it's now undoes you on a game like this, where maybe Liverpool did just sort of have to hang in, it was all a bit awkward, but if you're going to act as though, you know, they were lucky against Tottenham, they battered Tottenham, and that's this is the issue with this really, is that, hearing that all the time, you just feel like saying, lads, this is one of the best teams ever to play English football. They maybe got away with a better one against Palace.
And the reason we keep ending up in penalty areas in the 80-odd minute is because we're good and we press you and we're fitter than you and we're better than you and we push you back and you can't stop us. And that's what keeps happening. And, like, you know, you saw Aston Villa, the way they spoke about it, the manager and the players afterwards, they were saying it was unbelievable, the intensity of Liverpool. Like, we're looking at them saying, how can they still be going? And, you know, I was at that game, I was close to the pitch, I saw Trent at one point sort of looked like he had a little bit of cramp, and then you can see it almost in his eyes that he went, I'm going to carry on going because I want to win. I want to win. I want to win this game. I want to win this league. And that's right through this team and the manager as well. You know, you saw the manager not accepting a point, wanting to go for it, ready and mow and all that kind of stuff. And that goes right through the team, the club, the squad. They want to win. They want to win every game and they want to win this league. That's why we keep winning matches, not because of luck, of fortune, of VAR. You know, Liverpool, is that the best you can all do? I mean, and then there's literally people who've taken the time to analyse all the decisions and said, well, Liverpool would still be top even if you took them all away. So come on, you can all do better. It's all a bit grim. We're boss, your shit. Cope with it.
Sorry, Neil, I was just going to say, it reminds me of the days when we were shite, and I'm talking about us being fifth in the league, shite, when you used to see our own fans fucking Photoshop Howard Webb with a Man United kit on and shit like that. And it's because we're good and people resent it. And for people to say we were lucky at the weekend, I don't think we were. What's lucky about it? You scored two perfectly reasonable
and
goals.
And the VAR decision's right.
Roy Hodgson said it was right. Roy, the Crystal Palace manager, has no complaints. He made it clear in every single one of his interviews after the game. Jordan Ayew clearly pushes Dejan Lovren.
And he likes an excuse.
Yeah, of course he does. You know, and he's not like he loves us either, do you know what I mean? And he's come out after the game and went, yeah, no complaints about that. It's a clear push. And it was a clear push. So this agenda that Liverpool are lucky, it's not lucky, it's persistence, sort of what Gareth's touching on. How anyone can look past the strength that Liverpool have got and just going, we're not going to get beat.
Were you really impressed with how they dug deep, Paul? You were there at the game and the atmosphere was
deep. They just went up the other end and scored. It was Liverpool just going, oh. The thing I was most impressed by is when they scored was the reaction. I was watching Virgil van Dijk giving it the arms, giving it to everyone around the pitch going, no, this is not what we're not getting beat here today. And within, 180 seconds, it's 2-1. Liverpool just went up the other end and scored, and you can say it's a goal mouth scramble. That's not luck. Liverpool took their chance. Van Dijk wins the ball from the corner, knocks it in. There's a bit of a scramble. They could have maybe got a bit more purchase on the clearance, but that's football.
And there's a foul on Divy, and there's an handball in there anyway. You know, take your pick. We deserved it. And I think as well, I think I was saying this on a post-match point as well, that there isn't panic around Liverpool when these things happen.
Not even in the away end.
And there used to be.
Not in the end. Like, people were disappointed when Palace scored. But in the past, and I mean this, people would have just got off.
Yeah.
Literally got off. Palace is a bastard to get away from. And people would have gone, oh, fuck this, I'm going. But you don't leave before the final whistle with Liverpool now. So there's that stat on Match of the Day last night, goals after 85 minutes, and I think Liverpool got 8 or 9 this season after that amount of time. That's incredible. And that's where the term mentality monsters comes from. It's refusing to be beaten until that whistle goes. And thankfully, no one can beat us because of that.
Dave, it's worth saying Palace are probably on top 15-45. First 15, everyone's feeling each other out. Liverpool maybe could do a little bit more, but Liverpool are much the better side, 45-80. And I think the manager's saying that in his post-match comments as well. 45-80, Firmino should, and it's a great save that stops him from making it 2-0 at that sort of stage of proceedings. Mane has the chance before the goal that he gets. Liverpool are the dominant force in the match from 45-80, and that is also worth touching upon.
Yeah, I think they've got a real tendency, haven't they, to improve in second halves if they haven't been particularly great in the first. That's something we've seen regularly this season. I think it always helps that they go in. They've got the screens up. The analysts have always picked out clips. There's always a specific area they can improve on. And I think you always see it. And I thought that was really the case because, like you say, the back end, well, from about 10-15 onwards, Palace were excellent in that first half and really caused Liverpool problems. But yeah, Liverpool massively improved from the off. I mean, Mane's chance that he misses, the one he sends around the post, is 2 minutes after the game restarts. The immediate improvement and put them on the back foot. And then obviously it's just a case of, because Liverpool don't take those chances, which I think is the one thing that Jurgen will probably be pulling his hair out about, is that, and the reason that so many of these games haven't been more comfortable, is because, you know, just not taking your chances when you're on top. But, you know, they wait, and then they take the chance when it matters.
They caused us problems. There's no two ways about it, is there? I mean, you know, we were doing content last week and talking about Andrew Beasley's stuff. And he was talking about, you know, how Liverpool hadn't given up more than, I think it was 3 shots on target, like from an opposition side. They had 6, yeah. So, you know, all of a sudden you're seeing there that, you know, they 100% caused us problems. They probably should have took a couple of those chances, as I mentioned before. We were a bit ragged. I think talking about sort of what will Jürgen be wanting to work on, I just think it's like the control aspect. That's the bit that was missing. You know, you still see threats there. I think the international break, you know, I think we're perfectly fine to reference it. You know, Jürgen.
Well, I said before, Newcastle, Man United, they're not good. Newcastle, they win 3-1. It's not a good performance. It's not vintage Liverpool, yeah. Certainly not from the first whistle.
But, you know, players are on the plane on Thursday. And, like, you know, the different time zones, long flights. They're in, I think, Dubai or something like that. Three of them. All that obviously plays a part. I think, you know, it's funny, like, we all sort of, I think at times can take elite sport for granted, and I don't just mean football, I mean all of it, because you don't see the prep and you don't really think about it. You know, say you watch a boxing match, you're watching two people there like in prime condition, and it's took them months and months to get there in terms of the eating, in terms of what they're doing in the gym, in terms of how they're living. And it's the same for these lads playing the football. And no sports scientist in the world wants you flying all over the show like 48 hours or whatever before you're kicking a ball. It's just not the right prep.
I think just going back to Palace, everything they do well is a nightmare for Liverpool. I felt that going into the game. So they've got you talk about Liverpool sort of not showing their offense, their usual strengths. Well, that three-man midfield with Milivojevic, Coyote and MacArthur is what's the word?
Combative.
It's combative, but it's also they'll neutralise you, won't they? So I thought Fabinho looked like he wasn't at his best, although you've seen when he got a little bit of space, his quality. So that lofted ball over the top's fantastic, isn't it? But, you know, Henderson was only really coming into the game when he's wide. But the main thing for me was with Townsend and Zahar and then Van Aanholt and Joel Ward, is it? Yeah. Who was at fullback the other side. That, again, stopped. Like, our fullbacks, which are our best strength, are neutralised because they've got to worry about one going the other way. So Trent wasn't allowed to go all day, pretty much. So that's why you were seeing Henderson wide right. So Trent was had a poor game anyway, but he was sort of neutralised by the threat of Zahar. They kept leaving Zahar up any time Liverpool had a set piece, which I thought was, it's old school from Roy, but it's good old school. Like,
yeah, agree with you.
So pinned us back a little bit more. Townsend, he blows hot and cold, but when he's hot, he's excellent. He did have a great game. He's really at it, and I thought he was really good on Liverpool after the match as well. But everything they did well was sort of designed to stop us. I thought, like, Palace come out of it, and I think Match of the Day was saying that's their best performance of the year, and they've put the top half, aren't they, Palace?
They were, but they
maybe dropped it, but they had a reasonable start. So, yeah, it wasn't one that was going to be great on the eye because of everything Palace were doing to stop Liverpool. But yeah, we
just
win.
Just on the idea again and into the second half, Steve, that, you know, how well Palace do really well, 15-45, but when it got to 35, I thought, well, the legs are beginning to go here, and then they had a little flurry. And I think one of the things that they come out second half, and firstly to get back to that level of intensity when you're not used to it, which a side like Palace isn't, is tough. But also the demands on the legs, again, this idea that Liverpool, even when they're not playing well, they weigh you down. And there were some people before the match who were talking about maybe start Oxlade-Chamberlain rather than Wijnaldum or Henderson. But when you see the way the game plays out, you really do feel as though the manager was right to go with the midfield that he goes with, because it just erodes Palace. Doesn't outplay them, doesn't destroy them, but it just erodes them over the course of that first 45, 50, 55 minutes.
Just before you come in, Dave, I was going to say, you could see that Palace hadn't quite got back straight into that mentality, because that's when Henderson opens them up. Yeah. It was almost like that was the warning. Oh shit, we need to get back to the way we were before the half-time whistle.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, the level of intensity you have to get to stop Liverpool at the moment is so ridiculously high that literally the half-time break can kill you in trying to do it. And it's that little moment of switching off, and Henderson has 2 centre-halves miles apart to slot a ball through for Mane, and that's the first 2 minutes of the second half, and you're like, well, and that's sort of how it went. Then I don't, you know, Palace continued to play well, particularly after Liverpool took the lead. I thought they sort of had a little bump again, and that, you know, the goal comes around. It's a well-worked goal from the equaliser from Palace, I thought. It was a really nice goal. But yeah, it's knowing that you've got to be concentrated for 90 minutes, and it's virtually impossible to do it against this side.
There's something on, Paul said before, Gareth Trent. He was obviously going to be targeted. Zaha wants to play off the left. He is Palace's best player and talisman. Townsend before, rightly praised, but they do look to get Zaha into play. He finds his way a little bit, Trent, but they really do get at us down that right-hand side for about 10 minutes. It's aggressive. It's not just when they've got the ball, it's when they haven't got it. And I do feel a little bit sorry for Trent in that, you know, if Trent and Lovren were playing for any other side in the country, they probably wouldn't get targeted anywhere near as much. But everyone looks at Van Dijk and Robertson and says, well, we've got to go somewhere.
You've got to go that side, yeah.
And with Zaha there, you know, it was torrid, I thought, at times. It was absolutely torrid on that flank.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you could see early on that it was a little bit in Trent's head as well. You know, he's struggled against Zaha himself before. Milner's obviously struggled against him as well. So, you know, they're more than aware of his talent and what he's capable of. And I think the manager as well, Klopp, has spoken highly of him in the past as well. So they will have all known, obviously. But, you know, Trent was mishitting balls as well and things like that. And he just looked a bit off it mentally. Full stop, I thought, early on. But as you say, I thought he came into it. And again, you know, like what I mentioned about Villa, like the fact that he's the age he is and he's able to do that is brilliant. Even Mane as well, I'd throw him into the mix and saying that, you know, we're referencing that chance that he had and the fact that he puts it wide. I think once upon a time in a Liverpool shirt, that would have got to him. You know, you remember when he went through that sort of, say, bad patch, but he went through a patch, and I remember him missing against Everton.
Yeah,
and he had that.
The autumn of 2017. Yeah, after he got sent off against City,
didn't he? After he'd done it, and then there was loads of stuff around, like as he spoke to the manager, and you know his problem with his form and all this. I think he's come on massively, and all the media around him over the weekend, I think, has been really interesting in that. You know, Robertson talks about him and says he's more ruthless now. The manager talks about him and says he's more aware of how good he is now than he once was. And I think you can see that. Like, we talk about individuals growing. I think the team's grown together as well. And it all just helps. You know, Trent recovers. Trent does okay. Zaha obviously gets in and scores and should score again as well. I mean, he's a mad player, isn't he? Like, he's got Everton in his locker, potentially. And yet you think, why are you kicking around at Crystal Palace?
One for the bingo, lads. He's the most curate egg footballer in the Premier League. He can be different levels of quality in the same passage of play.
The thing with him is, it's his first goal of the season. It's not good enough. So you can't go to Tottenham and do that.
Yeah.
You know, look, I watched Tottenham at the weekend. Son's running the game. Moura's constantly in the game. Moura scores. Zaha can't get away with that at Tottenham, so he'd be on the bench, and that is why he's still at Palace, because he's consistently not good enough. He had a spell, was it last year or the season before, where he was getting goals, but he has never scored enough goals in his career. So that's why he's Crystal Palace's best player and not Arsenal's or Tottenham's, who I think he was linked with Arsenal in the summer, wasn't he? But I mean, yeah, that chance at the end is the difference between if that falls to Mane or if it falls to Zaha. And, you know, that's the difference.
Do you think there was an element of the fact that it's Alisson in goal?
I've quite weirdly watched and replayed that loads of times. Alisson makes himself absolutely huge. It's Schmeichel-like. He doesn't give him much to aim at.
But Robbo gets close as well, doesn't he?
Robbo's pressing him, but he's got time to stop, open his body and put it in the other corner for me. Zaha, I'd be really annoyed with any Liverpool forward who does that. I mean, I think if you look at Palace, and this is maybe where Liverpool can take some risks, is Jordan Ayew doesn't score goals. Doesn't score. I think he went some mad run without scoring goals. Zaha, one goal this season. Benteke not scoring goals for Palace. So these are footballers you would all expect more goals from. Same for Townsend, to be fair. Townsend's got some brilliant goals in his locker, but not consistent goals in his locker. So I think, you know,
you should bury that.
Oh, that one first.
I don't know what he's doing as well with his foot.
It's a brilliant ball.
What are you doing? Like, why are you trying to finish it like that?
Some of these footballers wouldn't try and finish it.
I mean, it made up that you did try and finish it like that.
Wrong side of his foot.
Yeah.
You know, so
weird.
It's a brilliant ball by Keyarte. I thought it was excellent. Like, I was always found it weird when West Ham let him go, and then Palace weren't playing him, but I thought he was excellent at the weekend.
Definitely.
But yeah, if Palace can get themselves a goal scorer, then I think they'd be.
But then you've got so many players there who possibly could score more goals but don't. Is that
you wonder if it's by design?
Yeah.
So anyway, less Palace,
more us. Oxlade-Chamberlain impact in the game, Dave, is a little bit of a concern. It's whether or not he's still getting the sea legs. Obviously, the position's not his perfect one. There's lots and lots of little reasons in there, but he worked hard first half. But in terms of on the ball, I thought he was pretty anonymous.
Yeah, I think the positional thing's a real issue for him. I just don't think he's an option out there. I would maybe call it now and say put him in. He'll play better, infinitely better, in a central position, because just go in either side, and because the job of Liverpool's wingers is completely different to, you know, it's nothing like a 4-4-2 or anything like that. It's going inside, making the last man, being basically coming in as being a centre forward, and he is just not that. And I just think he found it hard out there. He's not making the same runs, and he's coming deep more and sort of trying to turn out, and it's just not really what you want the players doing in those positions.
Do you think he might have changed the shape, Dave, if it wasn't for the fact, to go back to Gareth's point, of the international break? There's no time to work with them. You almost need to just say to them, we're doing what we've done. You know the drill, lads. I am wondering about that he keeps having to make quite big decisions around selections, but it's immediately after the international break when he's got no time.
I think he did change the shape a bit, though, because I thought first half we were 4-1-4-1.
I think he tweaks it a tiny bit, but not a great deal.
I just don't know why he didn't go for Origi from the off. I don't know whether the fact that Origi's been so much better as a substitute of late, and that's in his head, and he's thinking, you know, he's a good option from the bench at Palace, particularly where you think it's going to be tough after the international break. But I think Origi's just a much better like for like. Obviously, he's not Mohamed Salah, but put him into there, put Mane on the right. That would have just made more sense to me, and I think. I do think Oxlade-Chamberlain struggled just purely because he was out there. I just think going forward, you say that you either put him in central midfield or you don't.
Is that the first time he's properly played in the front three?
Well, he sort of played as like a false nine position, didn't he, the other week? Which again, that's sort of more suited. You know, if you're going to put him in the front three, maybe put him there, because that sort of coming in deep and playing as an attacking mid like Firmino does suit him better. I just don't like him in the wide positions.
So it's weird. I totally agree with you. For a lad that started his career as a winger, I don't want to see him with chalk on his boots at all, really. I think he's a much better player when he's driving through the middle, and probably because you just afforded a bit more space. I didn't think he had much of an impact at all, and I was pleased when he went off, to be honest.
You knew as well that he was running. I mean, as soon as we seen the team, and I'm sure everyone else around the table was the same, I think we all talked about, is this another formation then? Because that's how, you know, like Dave's saying, I think we were talking about it, saying, well, the best you're going to get out of him, if he's in between the lines, if he's deep, if he's got someone in front of him, out there, just didn't influence it at all, did he? I was looking at the stats before, I think he makes 12 passes in an hour.
Yeah,
which is mad, isn't it? I think you knew you're only going to get an hour as well, obviously, because of his rehabilitation still, which is still ongoing. I mean, I read something the other week about one of the physios saying basically that the amount of time you're out for, you basically need that again to get back to your level. So therefore, he needs a year. He needs a year to get fully to the, you know, 100% Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. It was a strange one. The Origi thing, I mean, he feels like he's been shoehorned in as well, though, at times, doesn't he? He struggled. I think basically when the front three isn't the front three, which how many times do we say that, then there's a drop-off, isn't he? There's a problem. And maybe I think if he ever... I mean, the games are so thick and fast now. When's he ever going to get the time to work on another shape? But you kind of think maybe he should do, because it doesn't quite work, and also switching Mane and stuff like that as well, it always seems a shame.
That's the problem for me.
But I think there's an element to that, but I wonder whether or not there's a little bit of him taking the opportunity to do that, given the fact that Zaha's going to play left hand side. I wonder if, you know, when he knows he hasn't got Salah, if he thinks, well, alright, I can turn that into a little bit of a positive, use Mane right hand side, he'll cover back that little bit more than someone. And I wonder whether or not he was almost glad to have that. Maybe if Salah had been fit, he might have actually gone for Mino left, Salah through the middle, and Mane right off the same basis. We've seen him do that against Leicester, for instance.
That's why I thought he played Oxlade-Chamberlain, to be honest with you, because I thought it was, again, paying Palace respect. That five-man midfield that I spoke about a couple of moments ago, I thought maybe it was just the fact that if they did things did get back on top, that Oxlade-Chamberlain could drop in and make that maybe the shape I was talking about.
Really interesting, the non-penalty, the fact that it ends up in the back of the net, Dave, in that it's from the corner area, but I went through the stats before, and Palace don't win a single header from any corners that they have against us, and they have a fair few. Every single ball goes into one by Liverpool.
that the slight angle, the slight move does make a difference when you whip the ball in. But you can't run around shoving people in the back. You just can't run around shoving people in the back. That's the beginning, middle and end of the matter.
There's just absolutely no debate about it. This is the problem about the VAR thing. Like, God, I really don't want to get into it, but it's like, if people are going to take their biases that far that they think that that is not, that shouldn't be ruled out, then how are we going to have a sensible discussion about it? Because that is as clear as day. He shoves him in the back. The manager of the opposition admits that it's not a goal, and we're still talking about the possibility. Paul Merson's going crazy and saying, you know, he should hand Liverpool the league now, which, by the way, all Liverpool fans would be fine with.
Yeah, if he go did ahead, that. Lad. Yeah.
If that's possible.
If we want to end the season now and give us the title, I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah, I'll do my write up now. That's fine.
Gives us longer on the ale, doesn't it?
But yeah, there's just absolutely no debate. The statistic there about the no headers is absolutely incredible, by the way. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, they don't win a single. They don't win
that's remarkable.
The first ball in every single time Liverpool win it.
And
every single
said
one.
About the centre halves as well. We always talk about Van Dijk. Lovren was absolutely incredible. That was his best game since coming in, I think.
You see, I agree with that, and I think that's fair, Dave. But the thing I loved about Van Dijk's performance is you actually, because he's Van Dijk and because he's so good, you don't actually see him do that much proper defending, muck and bullets defending at times. And he did muck and bullets brilliantly. We often say, oh, it's a Rolls Royce of a performance. Well, that sort of was a Rolls Royce of a performance, but it was doing off-road racing. Yeah. I honestly thought he was tremendous over and over again of just going, what, you think I can't do this? Watch this, body on the line, block. I thought he was terrific.
And there's even one where someone gets on the outside of him inside the fullback and he runs him down to the touchline and plays the ball off them to win a goal kick for Liverpool. Absolutely.
Stuck his tongue out. Stuck his tongue out.
Unbelievable defending, just incredible. The pair of them I thought were just fantastic. In terms of the passing either side, you know, Lovren was pinging crossfielders on his left foot that just were taking Palace's midfield out of the game and things like that. And Van Dijk's always up to that. Just a brilliant performance from both centre halves, which sort of laid the basis of Liverpool to win a narrow game.
Made up for Zegzi. I think he's had three good games. I think he's played, he had the mistake in the Champions League game, but in his league performances, I think he's been absolutely faultless. I thought the Leicester and Man City games, he puts in decent performances, but Crown of Glory was the other day. I thought he was excellent.
You shouldn't now, don't you? And think about the idea of how close he comes to leaving.
Especially when I watch Joe Gomez, to be honest. I don't know what's going on with Joe Gomez. I'm an absolutely massive fan of him, but he looks so shaky. And the thought that he would have been the replacement and maybe would have found his level again next to Van Dijk, or the extra games would have helped him or whatnot. But yeah, Lovren's playing at the level you want Lovren to play at, and the level that I think everyone knows he can get to, but he often lets himself down. But he's not been doing any of that. If anything, I think this period of him being fourth choice, demoted, demoralised, all that, has maybe made him go back to the drawing board a little bit, have a little think about the way he plays football. And he's been so responsible. And also the thing with David said, I think on the ball he's been fantastic. Even like this new thing where you can have the two centre halves in the box, I've noticed like he's allowing us, like the ball often goes to Van Dijk and Van Dijk tries to pick out a pass, but Lovren is making moves that's allowing Van Dijk to ping it to the fullbacks. He's been so impressive since he come back.
I like that idea of that he's knuckled down. I mean, we never know, do we? But we're just sort of theorising. But I think he's not being out in the press. I've not seen like mad stuff on social. No. He used to quite like,
for a fellow who's described himself as the best defender in the world in the press.
Do you know what I mean? And like he used to go. I know it's only little small things, and like I say, you piece together things. This is where we are. We're not in their world, if you like, but he was always like going live on Instagram while his chef was making something in the background or whatever.
He was opening his hotel or something.
I don't know. I think right now it's just like he's gone, right, fuck this. You know what I mean? I'm knuckling down. I'm showing everyone what I'm about. And let's be honest, as well as, you know, performing well for Liverpool and doing what he's doing, the likelihood is that he still goes, like in the summer. So he's playing for a move as well. He's playing for, you know, one more big contract somewhere else, perhaps. Or maybe, yeah.
Well, I remember us doing them transfer shows in the summer, Neil, and I had him as the one.
Still bodying him about that, are you, lad?
No, he's come out looking all right, to be fair. But, this little Chelsea plan looked all right. But
one vindicated bastard, mate. Go on.
Yeah, you know, I hate that. I'll come onto his jumper later. But I said he'd have been one of the first signs I'd have made for Arsenal, who I got given.
Oh, he'd be their best centre half
by miles. by miles. And we're, like, people are quick to like just go, oh, he's not a Premier League footballer. Of course he is. He mightn't be Virgil van Dijk, and he mightn't have been Joel Matip at that period. But he's proved, the one thing I think he can do, you know, he could be an integral part of us winning the league. And I'll be made up for him, sorry, Neil. Sorry? Just because he's the first at the away end, giving it the big arms, yeah. And I love that.
Well, he loves the Reds. He loves the Reds. But I think the thing about him, Dave, and again, he might make a mistake next game, most centre-halves make blunders every now and again. It's literally part of playing the position. You're not always going to get it perfect. Not everyone's Van Dijk. But what I like about him, and what I think really reflects well on the manager, is when the manager gets to speak to him after he doesn't get his move, he's able to say, look at Joel Matip's pathway last season. He started that season. He was fourth choice. He plays the Champions League final. And that's huge, huge praise to Klopp for this, in that he's got them all bought into his methods, the way he does it, the fact that they can all see there's a journey, they can all get involved, they'll all get to play certain games.
And I think it helps that we've got a fairly familiar starting lineup, and yet he doesn't play favourites in terms of who that replacement will be for Joel Matip the moment he goes out, because everyone would have said at the time, well, Joe Gomez is going to come in and get a run of games. I remember writing something at the time saying that, you know, Lovren seems to be, you know, after the first couple where it wasn't really sure, you couldn't really sort of work out. Joe Gomez had played against Salzburg and then Dejan Lovren had been in for a couple and you couldn't really work out which way it was going. And I sort of felt that Lovren was the one he was backing. And wrote that, and the, you know, the replies you get on Twitter are crazy, like, oh, Lovren's useless, there's no chance, there's no way he's going to pick him over Gomez. And then, and it, you know, this is me just vindicating myself, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Fucking go loose.
Yeah. But because he doesn't play favourites, and clearly at that moment, Lovren was doing better than Joe Gomez in training and in the games.
I think it proves Klopp's his psychology thing, where he says, no, you're not going to go because you're going to play games. And you're like, I'm not going to play games, am I? No, you are. And it, like, in my head, looking at Brighton at the weekend, I'm going, I reckon Lallana plays because Fabinho's suspended. And that's just to prove Klopp, you're the backup to Fabinho this season. Am I really? No, lads. If Fabinho's not playing, you're playing. I reckon Lallana plays at the weekend for that sort of reason.
And that gives you, that keeps training at high level. That's keeping everyone motivated and showing that basically he always talks about training. Klopp talks about training all the time. And it's something that fans, I don't think, talk about enough. He sees these players play football every single day of their working lives. So he knows who's playing well. He knows who's good and knows who's good at doing this and that. So, and the value of training is obviously if you play well enough, if you are Dejan Lovren and you play better than Joe Gomez in training, you will get into the team, and that he's proven that and he's done brilliantly.
Just on Van Dijk though, that and it's on David's point as well, is that you talk about the development of Van Dijk. This is the bit where I don't really get Klopp gets enough credit, is the development of the footballers. Is Van Dijk comes in as a very good centre-half, but he's not this level. He's not this elite level. Every player that comes through Klopp's training ground is improved. Whether that was the goalkeeper, Van Dijk, the lads who were already there, or like Gini Wijnaldum comes from Newcastle. Look at him now; he's a completely different footballer. It's unbelievable the level. We used to praise Brendan Rodgers for this, but I think Klopp's doing it to another level. It's just elite footballers taking them up a couple of steps as well. And it might not necessarily just be the training ground. In the head, the clear mind thing, Klopp will take anything on him. It's unbelievable the mentality of the footballers, but also how much they're improving and still improving. That's the thing for me, is Van Dijk's getting better and better. So, as you say, he's not, you know, you heard about grow up and my dad would say, oh, Hansen would never get mud on his shorts, or that Bobby Moore thing, they'd always be spotless, wouldn't he? Well, Van Dijk can do both. He can be the last-ditch defender, but he'll also leg you down the channel, see you off, do the bit in the air where he'll bring it down his chest. All this is just getting better and better and better. They all are, Fabinho, the lot.
There's that first half then goes into the second half mentioned before about the half-time. But for me, Gareth, it's more, for me, it's, again, the mental side, really. I think what you see second half is this idea of, right, we've just got to take it up a notch. Mm. We're going to have to take it up a notch here. We've all got together. We've all looked at each other in the dressing room. From what the way it sounds, Jurgen's not throwing stuff around. He's not giving rallying speeches. That's not what happens. That Jurgen's quite open about that. That isn't what happens. As Dave says, there's analysis done. There's bits of video stuff. But you also get the impression the players get to look at each other a little bit and say, right, it gets better here. It gets better pretty quickly. You get the impression that the mentality ripped through them. Van Dijk, Henderson, even Milner as a sub. You get the impression that's in there. And then they really do. Palace just can't keep up with them, I think, from 45 to 60. And maybe they should put the game to bed, and maybe they need to show not just the missed chances, but a bit more composure. It's mad to me they show more composure at home to Man City than away, some of these away grounds that they end up in, but that is the case. And, you know, it's chances and chances to create chances. They do need to break better, but they are really impressive, I think, second half.
Well, like I mentioned before, I don't know why it stuck with me, but Kyle's face, it was like, you know, he looked like a fella who'd been
white, wasn't
he? Yeah, it's just like constantly grafting over and over again, constantly concentrating, and like, you know, the levels of concentration mentally as well as, you know, the physical side of the game to keep going for 90, 95 minutes against this Liverpool side, all the best. And like, you know, so often as well, we've seen that raise from half time as well. I mean, I've mentioned before on shows that, you know, the games at Anfield, like, I'll have a pint and not always be back, like, you know, dead on the kickoff for the second half. And I've missed all kinds because we start second halves as a rule generally well, because they've sorted that out. And I think, you know, you're talking about what they do with the half time break. I think I read something on that somewhere. Someone wrote a piece about it recently, I'm sure. So I've took it in from somewhere anyway, that they sort of literally broke down, like, what can we do in this time and what is the best way to do it? And the best way, when you think about it, probably isn't coming in big thunderous speeches and all that. It is, like Dave says, throw little clips in there, say, you can do this, you can do this, maybe we can catch them that way. And, you know, that Fabinho ball, which is brilliant, by the way, to Mane, you know, maybe they looked at something like that and was like, there's something there, you know. And then immediately they come out and Henderson's playing something similar to Mane again, and he's nearly in. So, yeah, I mean, the whole setup, I think, at Liverpool, it can't be said enough that it just feels the most professional it's ever been, really, from top to bottom. And, you know, I like that Klopp said the other day that his favourite game of the season was that Arsenal game, because I think it was probably mine as well, in a way. Yep. In that all of these lads that are on the periphery, that you read about, that you hear about, I don't spend my time watching all the youth team, I've got to be honest. I don't find the time for it. Maybe I should. But, you know, to see them coming in and having the same attitude and the same balls and the same responsibility and the same pushing all the way to the very end and not giving up and all that, you know, that's coming from true leadership at the top of the club.
It's when the dressing room starts managing itself. You know, you hear so much, and there's so many managers under pressure at the moment about them losing dressing rooms or such and such is unhappy. Well, I think when you're winning, the opposite happens, is that the job just becomes so easy for you because they continue to set their own standards. So if someone steps out of line or someone's not covering, it's the player. The manager doesn't have to tell them because the players will. It's another incredible thing that happens with just the amount of points we're amassing at the moment, that if the minute something drops, Henderson's on you, or if Henderson's not on you, Van Dijk's on you, or whatever, it just goes right through the team. It's brilliant.
Second half, I think for me, you know, there's the great save. He gets the winner in the end. I think he's the marked improvement between the two halves, Dave. I think his second half performance is excellent. It isn't just the idea of those chances. I just think he gets himself so much more involved in play. He's moving around all over the pitch, finding up little pockets of space. I think he more than anyone goes up a level second 45.
You wonder whether part of the analysis was telling him where the spaces would be.
Yeah.
Because he was, like you said, a massive improvement, and it was just, he started seeing all those things where he comes short and he shows he's probably got the best first touch of the club in some of those tight areas. He's dropping a shoulder and shimmying off, and then the whole game seems to open up just from a little movement from him. And that was massive for Liverpool's second half. I think that was one of the, they were playing a lot more football because of him, and because when he gets into those pockets and he turns out, that allows your wingers to go. And yeah, it was just he was just fantastic. He's got this thing as well that I've noticed where he's not the quickest player, but he's always sort of, when he touches the ball just ahead of himself, but always just enough to drag someone in and leave the man behind him, that seems to just completely open the game up. It's incredible, just judgment of space. Like, he's just a fantastic footballer. And yeah, and I thought he was probably the main difference, the one that got Liverpool playing in that second half.
The one thing I would note, Gareth, is it's the second game in succession where, whether it's coincidence, whether it's these things happen in football matches, and sometimes it happens with subs in general, but I think it is the second game in succession where Liverpool got poorer when Henderson went off. I do wonder if it's a game, difficult game to get the pace of, which could say the same thing of Man City. I don't know whether or not Henderson knows he's coming off, so he's running around doing against City 90 minutes running in 60, or 90 minutes running against Palace in 75, so suddenly that's a
difficult thing to go and match, but you've got to make the sub. If you're going to tell the player that's what's happening, you've got to make the sub. But I did think we did get poorer when he went off.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something in that around more almost like packing intensity into periods. I thought that about Oxlade-Chamberlain, like the way I said before. You know, you knew you were only getting an hour. We all said it. You start and there's no way he's finishing. And I wonder whether it's a similar thing there where it's just like, you know, the way we win this game is we just were unbelievably intense in midfield. Like we said before about, you know, they've got their own grafters there. So we had to better them. You know, the old chestnut of, you know, winning the right to play almost, that kind of stuff. And so also as well, the calendar's unbelievable, isn't it? Like, you know, we were talking about it before in terms of what we've got to do, and all we've got to do is sit in front of microphones and cameras and stuff. You know, they've
strong rotation policy from us, isn't there, Robbo? I've just had a 2-week break. We'll go from there. I'm fresh.
They've got these lads have got to run, what, 12, 13, 14K.
But they haven't got to do half an hour's wham, have they?
Every few days.
Yeah, Paul Gibbo's a mess.
So, you know, Henderson's unbelievably fit anyway, I think, and, you know, that goes without saying that, you know, whatever you want to say about the lad and his quality, and people have always got plenty to say on it, haven't they? He's always grafted and he always will. And so if there's a drop off when he goes off, it's understandable why, and there was, yeah.
I think one of the things, though, Paul, where I do think if the manager might have a little look at the video, have a little think about it. One of the things that happens is when he does Milner Henderson, he always wants Milner left. So he's making two changes to make one, if you know what I mean. He wants to take Henderson off, but he goes Milner left and he goes Wijnaldum. Now listen, he started Oxlade-Chamberlain there, and I think given the game situation, even if Oxlade-Chamberlain had been on the bench, I don't think he'd have done Oxlade-Chamberlain-Henderson.
No.
But it is maybe something that he does need to think about, is that sometimes you're not just disrupting one part of the pitch with the sub, you're disrupting the midfield as a whole gets disrupted.
Especially in a tight battle like that. Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much you learn when you're playing football about what so and so on your side's gonna do, or you've got to watch for that run or whatever. And when you swap around or whatever, all that knowledge is lost in game. So yeah, I agree with you. I don't quite understand. James Milner would be quite competent both either sides. You'd imagine he played right wing half of his career, didn't he? So I don't understand his reluctance to do that. I don't know if it's a consideration around Trent or whatever. My only thing is I wonder whether the Henderson substitution was in response to the Fabinho booking. Henderson's got a hell of a week ahead of him. You'd imagine he's got Napoli obviously in the week. You'd imagine he starts, and also he's going to have to go again against Brighton, isn't he?
And you expect he starts against Everton.
And yeah, exactly. So that's a big week. So I think he wants Henderson on the pitch for all of them, but knows he probably can't give him four sets of 90s. And Liverpool are going to have to get better when he goes off and retain the same level of intensity.
I'm just thinking about Brighton, about the possibility of Lallana coming into the number six. That's just popped
wild,
into my head. It's just possible, though, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, I don't know whether
they're
that
the sort of games
it...
I think that he's designed for. Sorry to talk over you there.
Yeah, no, home games, isn't it? Against sort of lower teams. You could probably do a job there, and I think it's a perfect opportunity to do it. Which is decent
against Villa.
Yeah, and it takes a load off the midfielders that you are asking to do so much throughout all this run. Maybe, you know, whoever he comes in for is getting a rest there. So I think that's.
But I think
perfect.
This is what he had it in mind for, was home games against sort of like the bottom half, where you just recycle possession. Someone who will pick a quick pass on the ball or whatever, or will pick the right pass. So I think, you know, there won't be as much dog's work that Fabinho has to do. So yeah, that's why I think that will happen. I mean, the thing with our midfield is that you did have Milner on the bench, you did have Keita on the bench, and the fellow we're talking about, Lallana's on the bench as well. So we're not short of options there. There's a complete midfield in there on the bench. So although I'm talking about that Henderson will have a tough week ahead of him, I think it's just because of the fixtures that are in front of us rather than the personnel.
Last little thing is the second goal is the winner, Gareth. I think Palace scored too early, to be quite honest with you, which is...
82.
82 minutes.
I think if they had any sense, they want to hold that back to 88 to have a chance to hang on. I did actually think it when it went in, I went, they've gone too early there. They really needed to get to about 87 if they were going to be able to hold that out, which tells you the confidence you've got on this Liverpool side at the moment. But again, it's just a ball in the mixer. And Van Dijk,
whilst looking awful, does absolutely brilliantly because he keeps it alive not once but twice, and he's the one who turns it into a scramble, and you really do get the impression that they're thinking, Christ, it's Van Dijk, and then it bounces right the way out. But there is a lot to be said. I think you see from this Liverpool side, Graham Souness used to say, you know, we used to say, if you want to play, we'll outplay you. If you want to fight, we'll outfight you. And if you want to be scruffy, Liverpool will currently outscruff you. And that's what I think you see with that goal.
Yeah, I mean, both goals are scruffy, aren't they? Mane's finish isn't true really either, but it's in the corner. But both posts and the keeper should probably save it and all that. It's brilliant. You know, piss boiling was mentioned briefly before, and I'm all for it. I love all that.
It's really unlike humans.
But you know, and both the goals have obviously got an element of that. But yeah, I mean, it's keeping the ball alive. It's getting stuck in. It's believing you can do it. And
it's keeping your head. For me, really,
because he finishes
it. He's the coolest fella.
Yeah, he finishes it. Yeah. Like it's in. That surprised me when I saw it back. Is how much he sort of picks the corner out.
The goalkeeper's side as well.
Yeah, it's an absolutely brilliant finish. And in the circumstances to
it's
just
who you'd want it to fall to. But also as well, I like the way afterwards, like, they tried to, you know, a question got asked about sort of, you know, always had a bit of a barren run and all that kind of thing, and Klopp was just sort of like, has he? Oh, I don't know, it's not a thing, you know. It's not in their culture at Melwood. It's not a thing. We're not counting games that he has and hasn't scored.
He didn't finish like a fella who's had a barren run, did he? To be fair, I mean, under so much pressure,
nine games without a goal.
I mean, he's not the only criticism of Firmino is his goal return, you would say. Excuse me, but the you know, it shows that it's not in his head. Or you can visibly see when Salah's having a barren run, because he sort of exists to score goals, doesn't he? But Firmino does so much more. It's not like he's not contributing to the team. Everyone,
it's a good save from that other chance, isn't it?
That's,
I think, when you first see it, you think, he should have buried that. What was he doing there? And then you watch it back and you're like, that's a good save.
It's a really good stop. Just on, that's really interesting, on the XG stuff, the goal, the Firmino winner is only 0.24 expected goals because on StatsBomb, because of everyone who's on the line and how crowded it is, and the fact that in those areas, more often than not, players go high. Yeah. And it is the fact, as you say, Dave, he really does just pick his spot. He passes it into the place where no one can touch you.
Yeah, it's just brilliant composure. It's like, you know, if one drops to you like that when you're playing football, I just try and hit that as hard as physically possible.
You'd want some sort of like pinball benefit through the amount of bodies in the box, wouldn't you? But he absolutely picks this one, and then maybe that's why the stats are so, like, 1-4 would only finish that or whatnot.
Zaha's only 0.2, the chance at the end.
So it's like an almost equal chance. Yeah.
I think it's really interesting, because I think that often when the ball falls to players in those areas, they do try to, you don't do the percentage thing, or you don't pass, you don't keep your heads, you thrash at it a little bit.
Well, Zaha does exactly what I would have done.
Yeah. Yeah, he decides.
Fool.
Yeah, he takes the David Lynch approach. We've talked through everyone. Last little thing is Andy Robertson. In terms of a lad, Dave, who was a doubt for the game, you don't see it in his performance in any way, shape, or form. He was very public after the Scotland sort of pullout about the injury issues he's been having, which does sort of throw into relief the quality that he's been producing under these circumstances, where he obviously doesn't 100% trust his body. You see the same thing against Palace. At no point would you have thought this is a lad who's carrying.
Yeah, we spoke to him after the match and it was quite a close run thing, really. I think the only reason maybe he made the decision on Robertson and not Salah is that Salah had the little setback, so, you know, they were both close. They were both similarly, you know, bad ankle injuries. But he's just an absolute warrior, isn't he? As well as a world-class footballer, I think there was absolutely no sign in his performance that he was feeling anything. And he did say it's something he's still sort of, there's still a little bit to manage with it. I think it's, you know, it's going to be a few weeks before that clears up, which is probably impossible in this run of fixtures that Liverpool have got. So he's probably going to have this now till May.
It genuinely wouldn't surprise me, just looking at the run of fixtures, if he doesn't play Bournemouth, he doesn't play Salzburg, certainly if we get a result against Napoli, and then he doesn't play the first Club World Cup one, it wouldn't surprise me if Liverpool tried to sort of manage him off from the 7th of December until the 21st if they get the result against Napoli. I was having a look before thinking someone's going to get a break there.
There's so much value in doing that as well, because he's so vital, isn't he? I don't think they can afford to be without him for any prolonged period by making it worse. So, yeah, I think any opportunity they get to give him
the only issue with that is the amount of games before that date.
Yeah.
That's the concern, is obviously you've got Napoli, you've got Brighton, you've got Everton, and then is it Watford on the 7th?
There was Bournemouth on the 7th, Watford on the 14th. So
But yet still, it's just such a busy time of the year and you need him. And, you know, I think James Milner is an able deputy, but the drop-off from Andy Robertson to any other left-back, quite frankly, is massive, isn't it? So it is amazing. Don't get me wrong, I don't think it was like vintage Andy Robbo at the weekend, but there was a test from Townsend. He does really well with it. Just get through these next couple of games and I'd be all for that little break.
Talking then, massive 3 points given the fact that City go and win. A strong showing from them, to be fair. They were 1-0 down. Chelsea's race is probably run, if ever it was a race from them. That's where the title position is at the minute. 8 points clear of Leicester, 9 points clear of City. I quite like Leicester to not win a game soon. Just in general, to be honest with you, if that could just get arranged, that'd be lovely. Although they're playing Everton next, so that's a complete game changer as far as I'm concerned. I've got Everton soon. I want Leicester to beat Everton. Let's prioritise. That sort of thing. Anyway, Napoli next. Pick me a team. Gareth, I think James Milner's going to start. It wouldn't surprise me if Gini Wijnaldum sits out.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's one of them, though. We've just been talking a few seconds ago about the idea of, you know, you get this done, don't you, if you beat Napoli. You know, you get to go to Salzburg and have a look around the Grimbo markets instead of worrying about winning the game.
That's so, my plan.
I'm really up, by the way, the players all go to the Grimbo markets as well.
So
is Van Dijk in a funny hat?
And then it's Brighton at the weekend, and I hate the phrase, no disrespect. Brighton are shite compared to us. So, you know, I kind of think...
Some disrespect.
So with some disrespect, I would say maybe Brighton's the one where you go for the rests, maybe. Maybe ask them to go again, get Napoli done, do you know what I mean? Get it won.
My only worry on that's the Fabinho thing. So you're already changing one, so do you want to end up changing two or even three?
Yeah,
so I do wonder whether or not that might get filtered into his thinking.
But then it's just Brighton.
It is just Brighton.
So Brighton,
some disrespect.
The thing is, he needs to get minutes into other players as well. So we're talking that, as you say, Fabinho's out. So I've spoke all about Lallana, but there's Keita sat there doing nothing. Milner probably does need minutes now. He's not getting as many minutes as he usually does. And obviously at his age, it's probably, I know, don't get me wrong, I know he's probably the fittest fella at the club, but it is imperative he gets game time. Same for Origi. You've got, I don't know when Matip's back, I'd imagine soon, so I'd imagine he comes back into the fold, so there's a lot to manage, but there's enough games to do. The thing with Liverpool at the moment is you can make one or two changes without looking like you've made one or two changes.
Well, so I'll run you through what I think the team will be, and I think there's only really one place possibly up for grabs. I think it'll be Alisson in goal, it'll be Trent Alexander-Arnold right back, it'll be Robertson left back, Lovren and Van Dijk, it'll be Fabinho, it'll be Henderson, it'll be Mane, Firmino. Salah probably gets back on the pitch given the fact that he was pretty prepared to put him on Saturday and picked him on the bench. And then the only question is whether or not he goes with one more. Do you agree with that, Dave?
I think he'll just go Wijnaldum.
Do you think he'll just
it's so? It's so crucial, isn't it, to Champions League final team, game into a dead rubber. It, you know what a difference that would make considering all the other. You know, they've already had a favour done for them in terms of that League Cup game and just getting that out of the way with the kids. Just having another game where you can say, well, we can play literally anyone we want here would be absolutely massive in that run. So I just think he's, Champions League final team and try and get the job done. Because also as well, Napoli are brilliant, aren't they? And they always give Liverpool the game. So I just don't think he's going to want to mess with anything.
Look forward to seeing Salah versus Koulibaly again in the league. I mean, the only centre-half on the planet, I think, that is close to Van Dijk, an honest one-man band in that defence. He's absolutely unbelievable, and every time we've come up against them, they've been difficult. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that one in the week.
I'm not having him.
What?
I'm not that. I think he's good. I just think this idea that he's nowhere near Virgil. Not having him.
No, yeah.
I'm not having him as anywhere near Virgil Van Dijk. Not having him.
Okay, well, there's a league.
That's fair.
Then there's him, and then there's Van Dijk.
No one's near Van Dijk probably, but he is probably as close as I've seen.
Yeah, Mo fucking roasted him last time.
Well, yeah,
I'm not having that. Him. I've watched Virgil Van Dijk. I know. And honestly, whenever anyone says,
"I didn't say he was just going to
be 150 million quid and all this," and I look at him and go, "Nah, he's good, but he's not the big man."
See you Wednesday night, mate.
Honestly, Wednesday night. I'll sit next to you Wednesday night and I'll tell you all the things he fucking does wrong. I'll have an absolute ball.
You tell him to his face.
A whale of a time. Absolutely not. No. But I think that's part of, I think genuinely the fact that he's enormous is part of the reason why he gets the Van Dijk comparison. I think he's good. I think he's really good. I just don't see he is, let's be clear about this. Virgil is playing the football of the absolute gods.
Yeah.
And, you know, people try to, honestly,
but I think if Virgil doesn't exist, you're talking about him as the best in the world. That's probably more my point.
I don't know.
Come on,
I don't know.
Who else?
Who?
Varane's good, but he's not as good as Koulibaly.
I think Varane's really good.
Marquinhos is good, not as good as Koulibaly. Laporte's good, not as good as Koulibaly.
I think Laporte's best than Koulibaly.
I think you're talking shite now. We'll agree to disagree.
I love Laporte over Koulibaly.
No disrespect.
Some disrespect. Last little thing to work right the way through is Flamengo are now the likely Club World Cup final opponents. You would have thought when that all comes together. It gives it a bit of romance, Paul. It gives it a bit of, there's the 81 references. They've got a boss kit. You like the name.
Biggest supported club in the world, rumoured. Is that right? They seem to claim that. I was watching a little bit on them the other day. I just sort of caught the highlights of the game, but just I was trying to get into a bit of Flamengo culture because boss name, isn't it? They're massively supported. I think they are the biggest club in Brazil. But a little bit like underachievers, and this is a massive deal for them. So I think, is that the first Libertadores or first since?
First in a while.
Yeah, I think they were saying it might have been their first Libertadores. So
I presume they would have won it in
81.
Well, that was what confused me. But maybe it's the first since then. But don't get me wrong, we've got to get through the semi-final.
And so have they.
Are we playing Chavis?
We don't know yet,
but we could do. So it's not as straightforward as people are making out. It's not a one-game tournament, this. But, I think it's going to be great. I looked through their team. So, like, the Diego Alves is the goalkeeper, isn't he? So he used to play for Valencia. The two fullbacks, one's Rafinha, the Bayern Munich Rafinha. Then Felipe Luis is the left-back. They've got Barbosa up front. Is he the lad who scores the goals?
He scored.
I think he's 30 goals in 38 games. Diego used to play for Werder Bremen, and Wolfsburg is the number 10 for them. So they've got loads of players who are old but have played in Europe. And then they've got Everton, the lads in midfield, which I don't like because I can just see all the headlines. Yeah, so. But no, I think I'm looking forward to the Club World Cup. I know there's been a bit of discussion around like League Cup versus that. There's no discussion for me. And I think obviously the fact that the Dinner Ladies will be playing against Aston Villa tells you just how the club are treating it.
All right then. Thank you very much indeed. Very quick prediction for Napoli, Gareth.
2-0 to Liverpool.
2-0, yeah.
1-0 Liverpool.
Excellent. Paul's making us all nervous again. Putting us through a big last 10. I'd really like a last 10 where you were able to just sort of sit back. Dave's trying to file a report here, for God's sake.
Come on.
He's got to try and make that work. Listen, last little shout out. We haven't done much of this sort of thing for a while. But if you do get the opportunity, listen to the Blue Room over the weekend. They even reference the fact there'll be Reds listening. Matt Jones is absolutely brilliant, as he always is. He's the absolute business hosting it. So if you want to listen to their post-match show, it is worth listening to. In general, on that point, how's that Merseyside power shift going, lads? There has been one. We've now got even more power. That's the way in which it works currently, the Merseyside power shift. It's only gone one way, and it's very much in our favour. Cannot wait for any David Moyes based developments. I'm gutted it hasn't happened during this show, as we'd have all done shots. Thank you very much indeed, Gareth Roberts, Paul Senior and Dave Lynch. It has been the Anfield Wrap this week in association with The Athletic, theathletic.co.uk/TheAnfieldWrap, to sign up for reduced prices, etc, etc. All the hits there. Liverpool are the absolute business. This is the best football team you've ever seen.
Listen, I hope you've really enjoyed the show. It was a pleasure. Great guests. Really, really good laugh. Feels great at the minute to talk about Liverpool. So thank you very much for supporting us and doing that. And if you can support us in winning the FSA award, that'd be the absolute business. It's theanfieldwrap.com/vote for tour. VOTEFORTAW. Give us a vote there. Thanks a lot. Sports Social Podcast Network.